Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Thank you very much for staying with us. On to Sudan, and I spoke to you about Sudan earlier on, saying that it would be, you know, it would really be a negligent of us if we didn't continue talking about Sudan. Commissioner at the African Commission on Human and People's Rights, Commissioner Solomon Dersu, is joining us on the line, and he is one of the commissioners, as I just mentioned, at the African Commission on Human and People's Rights, who are and should have oversight on what is happening in Sudan. There was a meeting that was held. It was the 85th ordinary session. It was held between the 7th and the 30th of October in Banjul in the Gambia. He does join me on the line this evening. Commissioner Dersu, thank you so much for making time for us. Good evening and welcome. Commissioner Dersu, I think you're muted. Will you unmute, please?
Yes, that's right. Sorry about that. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Dersu, I was just mentioning the fact that there was a session held at the Africa Commission on Human Rights on the 85th ordinary session. And, you know, you presented some a report as a collective on the issues of Sudan. You had asked for an extension, and that extension began on the 5th, I think at the 3rd of November. Talk to me about what has happened since the 3rd of November in Sudan.
Well, I think the African Commission on Human and People's Rights put together a fact-finding mission that is made up of five members of the commission who are operating remotely by receiving testimonies and witness evidences on the kind of human rights violations that were being perpetrated in the ongoing conflict in Sudan since its beginning in April 2023. The nature, kind, scale of those violations and the actors involved in the perpetration of those violations, and these were conducted remotely because the commission didn't get the kind of cooperation that would allow it to be on the ground, not just because of the conflict situation, but also because of authorization issues that would have allowed the commission to be on the ground. So it had to conduct the fact-finding mission remotely, and it established that all the parties were involved in the perpetration of very serious violations of human rights and breaches of international humanitarian law. Some, particularly the rapid support forces, were engaged in acts that may amount to international crimes, including ethnic cleansing, contrary to Article 20 and 19 of the African Charter on Human and People's Rights. And indeed, since then, we have witnessed an escalation of the situation, particularly in Al-Fashir, and continuation of fighting involving, you know, destruction of civilian infrastructure, but also attacks on civilians in North Kordofan. The one particularly major region of concern for us and for the wider people on the continent and internationally is the situation in Al-Fashir, where we are witnessing daily reports of very widespread violence being meted out against the civilian population, including people who were displaced and in displaced camps as a result of earlier violence in Darfur, including the one involving genocidal violence against particularly black Sudanese in Darfur from 2003-2004. So we are at a moment when there is urgency for some serious action being taken for actors such as the African Union and the UN, assuming their full responsibility in order to avert the unfolding mass atrocities in Sudan.
So, you know, the report that you speak of that was published on the 21st of October 2025, and I mean, it was just the other day, but it feels like such a long time looking at where we are right now. You made some commitments, as you said, you know, access to being able to conduct your work there. You haven't been able to do that. In your conversations with the AU, and I know this is not your mandate, but are there conversations based on what is currently happening right now on a peace mission, a peacekeeping mission, perhaps to be discussed at this moment in time?
Well, there are quite a number of discussions happening at the level of the African Union. Mm. And indeed, we, in addition to the report that we launched on the 21st of October, covering violations that took place in Sudan, across Sudan, in the context of the war, we also issued a statement in the context of the fall of Al-Fashir into the hands of the rapid support forces and the emerging reports of mass atrocities accompanying this development. And in that statement, we called on the African Union to actually invoke Article 4H of the Constitutive Act of the African Union, which authorizes the African Union to initiate an intervention for protecting people from mass atrocities, most notably crimes against humanity, war crimes, and genocide. And some of these are already the kind of violations that we feel constitute and have already met the threshold for invoking Article 4H. So there is indeed a very urgent need, a compelling one, for deploying a protection force in order to create a safe zone, particularly for civilians who are caught up in this very brutal and indiscriminate attack that is directly targeting certain communities, particularly civilians in Darfur.
There are member states and other organizations and agencies who've conducted their work who have pointed directly to the United Emirates being a proxy, well, the RSF being a proxy from the United Emirates, saying that they are complicit in what is happening and, in fact, funding what is going on, and member states and others also calling for their expulsion from the AU and also other harsher, you know, punishment or at least harsher conditions in relation to how the continent relates to them. What's the position of the commission right now, and what, you know, what has the commission stated in the past, I suppose, two, three weeks?
Well, when it comes to the investigation mission of the commission, I think our remit was largely to ask the question, who are the actors who engage in the perpetration of the violations? We, I think, haven't, in terms of our terms of reference, expanded to look into the factors and forces that enable and facilitate the perpetration of these violations. And indeed, part of, I think, the set of measures that needs to be put in place beyond and above arresting the perpetration of violations that civilians are currently being subjected to, that is by acting on the actors directly, indeed there is a need for intervening to address the factors and conditions that make the perpetration of these violations possible. And among them is the supply of weapons, the supply of resources to the parties to the conflict, which, among others, involve the UAE, which is supporting and providing all kinds of support to the rapid support forces in particular, which is engaging in some of the most heinous acts of mass atrocity violations. Mm.
Last week, there was an attempt by the RSF, the Rapid Support Forces, to deny what is going on. They were saying, no, you know, they're not responsible. They will conduct an investigation. And I suppose it was a PR exercise. Since that announcement and that statement from them, have they at least then, you know, slowed down in their persecutions of people?
I think it's a good thing that RSF is actually coming out and saying that it doesn't support and it wants to undertake investigation. Mm. But for this pronouncement to be credible, the test would be for RSF to accept international investigation into these allegations. For the RSF to accept deployment of protection force on the ground in order to ensure that, you know, civilians are actually spared from being target of violence. That would be the test for the credibility of this pronouncement that have been made by the RSF. Mm. So it's important that the RSF actually comes out publicly making this pronouncement. I think the rest of the international community actually needs to hold them accountable for that. And the way to do it is actually by testing this credibility, by nudging them into accepting deployment of actors who actually verify what is happening on the ground, and deployment of a protection force to spare civilians from being target of violence.
Chad had acknowledged cooperation and they were going to be supporting your efforts in getting field access into Sudan. How's that working right now? Is that still in place?
Actually, the Chad expressed willingness to cooperate with the commission for purpose of providing access to refugees in Chad. Mm. It's not to allow the commission to cross into Sudanese territories. That wouldn't be something that is within the realm of legally permissible act on the part of the commission. So the focus really there is to be able to have the green light and then put in place the logistics and the necessary arrangements that would make such an undertaking possible. That is where things are, as far as that is concerned.
I suppose I'm asking this, Commissioner Dosso, because I'm assuming if Chad facilitates access, not necessarily in Sudan, but, you know, a passage, that probably is also the kind of route that humanitarian aid would need. And I don't know to what extent you would know about that.
No, I mean, look, as far as humanitarian access is concerned, I think all access points need to be open, not only on the border, but also inside Sudan. This is a requirement by international law, which is binding on all actors, both government and non-government actors. And failing to do so would have legal and criminal consequences. So the idea of, access from the side of Chad is not for undertaking investigation by an entity like the African Commission on Human and People's Rights. But that also requires the cooperation, not just of Chad, but also the Sudanese actors who legally and de facto on the ground would have control over the territory.
And you know, obviously we know, you know, the position of RSF. What about the Sudanese army? What's their position on allowing access?
Well, as far as, you know, the African Commission on Human and People's Rights is concerned, there are ongoing requests have been put forward by the Commission for on-the-ground access, although formal response is being awaited. At least, you know, there are signals that, you know, there is willingness to cooperate with the Commission, but we have yet to get official confirmation of these signals of willingness to cooperate with the Commission.
Well, Commissioner Grassi, surely that's a concern. I mean, we all, the world, I think, is concerned about what is happening. Maybe my question is, what has to happen to get swift movement and swift reaction so that people's lives can be saved?
Well, I think the first and most important thing, as you would imagine, is cessation of hostilities.
Yes.
Because that would mean an end to the indiscriminate attacks to which civilians are subjected throughout this war. Without cessation of hostilities, civilians in Sudan wouldn't have a respite. That is why the call from the side of the Commission as the first step was also in the interest of protecting civilians for the parties to unconditionally cease all hostilities. And the second, going beyond that, is basically for all parties to extend full cooperation with international efforts, not only for facilitating humanitarian access for people who are desperately in need of humanitarian assistance, but also cooperation with international institutions that would undertake investigations in order to establish the conditions on the ground in order to facilitate restoration of normalcy, in order to facilitate also conditions for rebuilding and reconstruction. It's important that this cooperation, which is a legal obligation, by the way, under Article 23 of the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, which guarantees all Sudanese people the right to peace and security, which imposes obligations on armed actors to fully cooperate with international efforts for achieving peace, which these actors have been unable to do, and show a great deal of unwillingness to do. And I think that is extremely important to facilitate and engage constructively and fully on the effort for restoring peace, for achieving political settlement in Sudan. These are really the kinds of things that are required. Yeah. But I think the most immediate and pressing issue really is the humanitarian access, sparing civilians from direct attacks, for which we need to have protection, presence of protection, force on the ground, and also, importantly, the cessation of hostilities, which is a prerequisite for not only curbing immediate physical violence against civilians and destruction of civilian infrastructure and civilian facilities, but also to create the conditions and the environment for negotiating peace.
In your experience, Commissioner Dasso, you mean the environment would have to be conducive for the parties to cease hostilities, as you said. You know, there's obviously a reluctance to do that. One wonders whether mediation is an option, and who would be the kind of party that would kind of bring both parties to the table, or all the parties to the table, to exactly do that, you know, to facilitate the cessation of hostilities.
I think that is a very important question. A question that continues to actually elude many actors, both on the continent and beyond the continent. It is exactly because of the lack of effective answer to this question that this conflict continues to unfold dangerously in a context in which violations were being perpetrated against civilians with impunity. There are multiple initiatives for peace in Sudan, many of which are not necessarily reading between themselves, you know, and as one senior international diplomat put it to me some months back, it feels as if the mediators themselves need mediation.
Sure.
That is the level of fragmentation that you see in the mediation space when it comes to the situation in Sudan. There is now some signs of hope, signs of hope with the group known as Quad, that the U.S. Takes a lead on, bringing together U.S., UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt. They called for a truce, a temporary truce, although, you know, it hasn't really earned a positive response from all parties that have shown that it has become the platform for some kind of at least indirect talks between the two major warring parties. And it remains to be seen whether or not it would gain further traction and lead to something tangible in terms of really securing some kind of truce, particularly, for example, in Al-Fashar. At the moment, that's, you know, that's not really happening, despite the fact that, you know, RSF actually expressed its willingness to observe the request for truce. And I think, maybe there is a possibility for working on this rather precarious foundation that the Quad provides in order to rally all others to nudge and push the parties into the negotiating table. That is extremely important. Otherwise, it's a matter of time before we see further escalation in the situation, which would actually exacerbate would bring further suffering to the people of Sudan, who have endured so much suffering already.
So obviously, a lot of the atrocities we're hearing about are around Al-Shafa and Darfur. For those who've been displaced and moved in other parts of Sudan, how safe are they?
Well, it's difficult to say how safe are they. I mean, the thing about their movement out of Al-Fashar is that, of course, they are in areas relatively far off from the kind of direct violence that they have run from. But how, you know, secure that is, if the war continues, even those areas into which they have fled may end up being subjected to the kind of violence that places like Al-Fashar have experienced and witnessed. That is why there is urgency for indeed halting the continuation of the fighting and its escalation.
Sure. Commissioner Dasu, hope to speak to you soon, and maybe next time we have better news, and I really appreciate you giving us your time this evening. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much for covering this situation. Please keep eyes on Sudan.
Commissioner at the African Commission on Human and People's Rights, Commissioner Solomon Dasu.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.